Welcome to the Analytics Power Hour. Analytics topics covered conversationally and sometimes with explicit language. Here are your hosts, Mo, Michael, and Tim.
Hey everyone, it's the Analytics Power Hour, and this is episode 187. Hey Mo, 187 episodes, you know what that means in America?
I don't know, but it's a lot.
It's a police code for a murder, 187.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that makes today's topic interesting.
Well, let's jump into that. Because we're going to murder this podcast episode. That's right. We've decided to do a hard pivot to true crime here on the Analytics Power Hour. We've heard that's a popular format. So.
We've also been acquired by Spotify.
Yeah. And here's why we're doing this hard pivot. Because we've been looking at our numbers and we've got to get those KPIs up. Key performance indicators. That's what I'm talking about. All right. No, but seriously, it is one of the most important parts of analytics, right? You take all this data that we pulled together and collected and put it into the hands of users in meaningful ways. And, you know, since the beginning of time, those three little words have sort of bedeviled us. Key performance indicator. Yes. KPIs. Here's the deal. It seems on the surface to be really simple. And yet, let's face it, most of the time, at most companies and organizations, this process and the resulting KPIs are just complete garbage. Why can't we get this right? Well, we, and by we I mean Mo and I, are kind of interviewing a special guest on this ultimate KPI episode. That's right. Tim Wilson is a senior director of analytics at Search Discovery. Prior to that, he was a senior partner at Analytics Demystified and has held numerous senior analytics roles in his long and noble career. He's an internationally known speaker and podcaster and a previous winner of the illustrious DAA President's Award. When he's not solving the most complex analytics problems, he is an avid photographer and he makes a mean fajita. But most importantly, today he is our guest. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be on the Analytics Power Hour.
it occurs to me that I don't think we've ever turned the mic on you. I think we've done it to everyone else here.
No, we've done it to me multiple times.
Yeah, well, most, you started as a guest, so then you were so good. We're like, well, let's... So now on this,
and we may go in the other direction on this one. And also, it was Tim's last episode.
That's right. Great to have you. That's why it's 187. We're killing Tim off. No, I'm just kidding. No, but I got through that whole intro, Tim, without calling you the quintessential analyst. Aren't you proud of me?
Well,
but
you just ruined it.
Unfortunately, it is one of my KPIs for the show is to make sure to mention it on each episode. So
that was not agreed to in the annual planning.
Okay. All right. So, Mo, I think, do we give you credit for this one? I think this idea kind of started with you, so why don't you kick us off?
Well, I guess one of the things that's coming up a lot as like we grow our team is we have lots of junior analysts, and this seems to be a skill is like coaching stakeholders through how to create, formulate the right KPIs for whatever it is they're trying to measure. And I was like, oh, I should do some training on this. And I was like, oh, Tim's done some training on this. And one thing led to another. And so basically, I'm going to get some ideas from him. And then...
Now that I think about it, I actually did a training at one of your former employers just because I was in town. You're like, hey,
yes,
why don't you come be the least fashionable person in this entire building and talk...
It was a fashion company, to be fair.
But you did say talk data.
Okay, so let's get started. So you have a meeting with your stakeholders and they're like, okay, Tim, we're going to run the most amazing campaign. It is cutting edge. It's exciting. We're on 10 different social media platforms. And here are the 5 metrics we care about. How do you handle it, Tim?
Well, it depends on what those metrics are. I mean, I rarely start at that level. I mean, it's usually they don't volunteer the metrics. They say we're going to run it, or we all run into the, like, we ran this campaign. Can you tell us how it did? Right. So I feel like even if in that exact scenario, I'd be like, okay, can we pause for a minute? Can you just tell me in plain English what it is you're trying to achieve with this campaign. And if they say reach or impressions or exceeding, if the click-through rate of, then I'll kind of try to gently stop them and say, no, let's not talk about the data. Like, you're about to put 50K or 500,000K or 2 million. Let's just say 500,000K.
Yeah,
that's good.
I saw
that would be somewhere in the trillions of dollars.
$500,000K. Okay.
So I start off by undermining my own credibility by not being able to speak numbers. So like I try to get them to just very, very tightly articulate, like, why are they doing this? Because a lot of times I feel like it's like, oh, we ran this last year, we're going to run it again. Or somebody somewhere decided it was worth spending money to do this thing, whether it's a campaign or a website redesign. And a lot of times no one's really captured and articulated that. So
are you talking about like an objective?
So yes, but I usually don't use the word objective, because if you ask 10, I literally watched a strategist and an account manager argue about whether a sentence was an objective or a strategy. So I kind of, you'll see that in creative briefs where it'll say objective. And to me, objective means 10 different things to 10 different people. So I use, and this is sort of the, anybody who's ever heard me speak has probably heard me talk about the two magic questions, which I branded. I totally lifted them from a guy named Matt Cohen. Like, if we just say, what is it you're trying to achieve, that, and give an answer that the business two or three levels up in the organization would nod their head and say, yeah, that matters. Because if you say objective, or you'll see it in a creative brief, and there'll just be words filled in. It's like, oh, I need to fill in the objective box. Whereas if you say, no, like, what is it you're really trying to achieve? Which some people would say that is an objective, but I think others would say, oh, that's your strategy. So that's kind of why I just feel like the word gets mucked around a lot.
Okay, so belligerent stakeholder who is kind of difficult to work with, you say, what is it you're trying to achieve? And they come back with like, well, we want new active users. We want to get returning users to come back, and we want to make sure that we get revenue. Like,
yeah, which is, I guess that's the thing. There is the, you could answer that question and you can use data. Like, it's not like you can't put a metric in it. And if you said, okay, so new active users, I mean, if I'm in a company where like MAU, I mean, monthly active users for, I've never worked in-house at a company where that's a big deal, but there are certainly lots of organizations and might even be people on this podcast where that's a big deal.
Number one company KPI. Well, I mean, one of two.
Yeah. And if I already understand like, yes, everybody knows that's the thing. That's how we're getting funded, or that's how we make revenue. Then we move forward. If I'm like, I know we say that, but can you help me understand exactly, just help me understand, right? So I will try to turn it around to say, I'm trying to understand your business. How does monthly active users, and not that there aren't times where then somebody gets super pedantic and explains like how math works and talks down to me, and I swallow my pride and I let them do that, but then continue to probe until I really understand. Like, I, as an analyst, want to make sure I understand why whatever their answers are, how that relates to business value, which the flip side is that when they say, but so that's like part one. And if I'm like, okay, this is a good metric, but I will definitely say if you say monthly active users is definitionally not a KPI. It's not a KPI until you say how many monthly active users. And that's the other place that organizations fall down. Revenue, our KPI is revenue. I was like, do you think you have fully defined a KPI when you've said revenue? Absolutely. We're in the business of making money. It's revenue. I'm going to go ahead and predict you're going to make $1. There's your KPI. Like, you're not measuring performance unless you actually set a target for it. So I don't know. Like, it is, you're kind of forcing me into the actual real world seeming kind of organic discussion without being like formal role playing. But I will run into someone saying, well, we're trying to drive awareness. It's like, okay, I get that awareness. Let's understand why awareness matters. Let's actually make sure that you're actually trying to drive awareness. And if you're Nike and saying you're trying to drive awareness, you're not trying to drive awareness of Nike. Like, are you trying to drive awareness of a new product line? You know, what are you trying to, because awareness, engagement's a tougher one, or I guess an easier one to knock down. Like there's no inherent business value in engagement. Let's probe on that a little more and say, which I guess you could go down the same path with monthly active users. I mean, there's a whole thing where you get into parsing, like how do we define active? But I feel like that's a whole other episode of the show, is do we have the right definitions?
So we were talking, like I said, I'm trying to think about like, how do I develop a training for some of our junior analysts around like developing some of these skills. And we were, a couple of the like leads in the data space were talking about it, and someone came back to the five whys. And it's actually not a technique I use myself very often, but I have used before. But it sounds, Tim, when you're in these stakeholder meetings, you are just focused on like asking a shit ton of questions. Is that?
Yeah. I mean, I pretty quickly, I feel like more often than not, I find myself in situations where I'm asking questions where they don't actually have good answers. Like it is very easy to go down that exercise and very quickly uncover that they don't have clarity around what they're doing and why they're doing it. Conceptually, I like the five whys. It's another one that it's easy to kind of punt on, but making that logical link, I mean, it's the same concept as saying, you're saying you want to do X, but have you thought about what this campaign is doing that is going to tie to business value? So I don't know. I feel like the five whys gets, I guess for anyone who doesn't know the five whys, it's W-H-Y, not the letter Y. And you just keep asking why with the hope that you're getting a link to why does that matter? That's my interpretation of the five whys, I guess.
And I feel like anyone with a toddler is just like, nope, sorry, I can't do
that. Yeah. So true.
But I think there are times where it's the KPIs are getting listed. I mean, if I'm trying to teach younger junior analysts, as you kindly pointed out, I've been senior now for, you know, a long time. I'm super senior. That there's this, what is the purpose of a KPI? And the purpose of a KPI to me, which I don't know that I can stand up and say I have any potential blessing that says this is right. It just, to me, it's very clear and simple to say it's not there to give you insights about the business. It is not there to tell you what you should do. Like if you focus on a KPI and say, really, that's just about objectively measuring whether you are meeting your expectations. So a lot of times I find myself doing training with clients where I talk about it as building a time machine, that you're setting up your KPIs, because if anybody who's been in marketing for more than 6 months has seen the case of looking backwards, looking at metrics, and then getting the question, you know, oh, we drove, you know, 1,000 form fills. And the question is, well, is that good? And so the only way you can determine if it's good or not is if you answer the question, well, what did we expect to have? And the only way you can answer what your expectations were is if back in time you looked ahead and said, what do we expect to have happen? So I have a little simple diagram that, and it's probably on a blog post somewhere, where I try to help the business understand that it's, you want to blow past this, because I'm not going to give you a report right now with the results of your campaign because you haven't executed it yet. But if I can help you understand that you are going to ask me whether these results were good or bad at some point in the future. And if we don't have this conversation now, I will not be able to answer that question and it will get ugly.
Well, this conversation could get ugly because I'm about to, I don't know. Okay. So there's this thing that happens when it's normally when you're dealing with a stakeholder that's like, I'm data driven. And I am still have this like internal fight that's going on where they basically are like, okay, well, to set a KPI, I need an analyst to do a whole bunch of work to basically like forecast what we expect is going to happen, yada, yada, yada. And like often then the KPI they come back with is actually just what we forecast. And I'm like, no, but like, forecast is what we expect is going to happen without doing this thing. So like the KPI needs to be bigger than that. But also the idea that every single KPI that gets set by every business stakeholder is going to need an analyst to do a whole bunch of work, like hours of investigative work before a KPI can be set, actually drives me insane, even though I am a data analyst who should probably be excited that people want to use data. And it like becomes this chicken and egg situation where sometimes I say to analysts, I'm like, just throw a number out there and see what they say. And I don't know if Tim's going to murder me for this.
No, I get to work with Val Kroll, who is amazing. And so I'm going to give credit to her for this, because we were in the midst of this with a client that we've done a lot of kind of different training and coaching and kind of helping them with their processes. Great client, but some kind of stakeholders who are not used to kind of thinking this way. And Val, just like, once we were talking to some of the stakeholders, and she said, what result would put a smile on the face of your stakeholders? Because these were like marketers who were then kind of beholden to, with some people who were in another part of the business. And she said, what result would put a smile on the face of those people? And it's not like those people are going to, they don't have the context of all of this, will not have had the context of asking an analyst to go and do all this digging to say, should I be excited about this? I mean, the fact is, if I'm going to spend $1 million US on a house, do I need somebody to go and do a bunch of research as to whether or not that's a worthwhile expenditure of $1 million to get a two-room shack in a horrible neighborhood? No, like I just have in my head, I'm going to spend $1 million. This is what I expect. That's not to say that there can't be some like looking at that historical data, but I mean, you're nailing, I think this happens to us all the time. It's really, we've been so conditioned to saying the historical data is deterministic, it's available, and it's just the facts. And as soon as we ask them to think about the future, of which they are, whether they fully admit it or not, do have some control over the results in the future, they get super uncomfortable. And recognizing that, okay, this is an uncomfortable space, and then they'll say, well, we want the analyst to go and figure out what we should do or what we should expect. And I think as an analyst, that is like, put on your soft skills, your patience, and say, okay, I can do that. But the goal going through life is not to just be average or a little bit above average. Like that's not a way to do something. I have another client, and he hates benchmarks, and he's got some funny little quirks, but I absolutely love the fact that he, as a senior marketer, will just rip members of his team if they show up and say that they, you know, exceeded a benchmark. He was like, really? Is that the, you know, or they hit the benchmark? He's like, really? That's what we're aiming to, just, you know, meet our own past performance. So is that what you're going to do next year? Do you want to, so you're incentivized to do mediocre work so that you're not raising the bar for yourself? Like, what the hell?
So, I can totally see why Tim likes this guy. While Helms is cringing over there.
No, I feel the same way. I just don't say it that way.
But I mean, that's a lot of times what they're asking the analyst for. And it's the same reason that media agencies will, you know, that's their favorite. It's what they want to set KPIs that are not volume based numbers. They want to do them on rates and ratios so they can say, oh, we've looked at, doesn't matter if you had 1 million impressions, but the click-through rate was, you know, 0.02%. Well, if we're going to have 500,000 impressions, then we want to be better than 0.02% or whatever, you know, ridiculous click-through rate. And that's them trying to punt and not really thinking about what they're trying to do.
Okay, you're going to have to delve into that a little bit more about ratios and rates versus total numbers. Walk us through that a bit more slowly.
Okay. Yeah, that's good.
So I like to say, we're going to see how many soapboxes, tried and true, I can mount. There is almost never an inherent business value in a ratio or a rate. because you're combining two metrics. Definitionally, you've got a numerator and a denominator. And the fact is, if I'm looking to drive quality leads and I'm looking at my conversion rate of my website at doing leads, let's go kind of simple. And I want to really focus on the conversion rate and say, wow, our conversion rate was, our lead conversion rate was higher, but it's like the web traffic dropped by a quarter and you increased the, and the sales team is not saying, oh, that's awesome. You got more efficiency on your website. I'm not saying conversion rate doesn't matter. I'm just saying at the end of the day, it's how many leads did you deliver? Now, one way to deliver more leads is to convert a higher percentage of them, but that's a means to an end. When it comes to I'm doing something, the more I can say I'm spending, because frankly, if I'm spending $50,000, I'll just keep making up random numbers, and my lead conversion rate goes way down, but my total leads are actually higher because I just drove an enormous amount of traffic very, very cheaply. Am I going to be happy? Like, yeah, but not if somebody's saying, oh man, I don't know. We spent all that. We got that shit traffic. The lead conversion rate was down. I'm like, yeah, but I delivered the number of leads you wanted. Are you sweating the server cost for the incremental traffic the site had to deal with?
So, okay. Annoying kind of, stakeholder, but we only want to drive quality leads.
Then, oh, cool. How many quality leads do you want to drive, and how are we measuring? How are we defining a quality lead?
Yeah, because again, you can go into like, you know, once you get a lead, then it's a marketing qualified lead into a sales qualified lead, sort of a funnel.
Got to get sales accepted lead and then a sales qualified lead.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I don't do this for sales accepted lead. My bad.
Okay, but Tim, just to give you a real life example. So, for example, an iOS user, let's say it costs us, I'm going to throw out a number, $3 to acquire, right? But iOS users are far more likely to upgrade to a trial, convert, blah, 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 whether convert means a trial or become a monthly active user. An Android user costs us 10 cents to acquire, and we acquire a gazillion thousand more of them, but very, very little likelihood of upgrading to a trial, staying on a paid plan, or becoming an active user.
Then I think it's just a mix question, right?
I don't even know that it's a mix so much as a math. Like if that is down to the point where you can say an Android, an iOS user is basically 10 times as valuable as an Android user, then say we want to drive, and this putting aside that if there are costs to service the unpaid at the Android, whatever. Mm. But if you basically come up with, okay, then what you really want is to get long-term business or lifetime value or paid subscribers. We're not going to wait all the way down there. We're going to back into it with some back of the napkin math and say, we want to get 10,000 iOS equivalent leads, which is either one iOS or for every 10. And we're going to come up with a formula and have that discussion. Cause you actually, what's happened is you've gotten to the point. I mean, you just did it. This is where you're really bad at being a crappy stakeholder, right? Cause you're articulating that really what we want is to drive paid subscribers. And then you've already taken the step to say, well, backing into that, we know that this quality differs, but we don't want to target a mix either. Likely. I was like targeting new versus, I mean, that's always a great one. We have a KPI of, you know, new versus returning, like a mix. Like, what the fuck is that? Like, we can manipulate that all over the place. Oh, ultimately, I want new leads or new users, and new versus returning may factor into that, but that's kind of how you get there. You're trying to ultimately get to new subscribers, back up, and you say a quality lead. I mean, I've talked about, we've done quality visits or an engaged visit. And it's like that is to me, I'm okay with that. If we say what we want is to get human beings who are engaging with our content, because if they consume our story in a meaningful way, we feel like that's about as much as marketing can do. And we want to make sure we're not just sending total crap traffic. So let's sit down and come up with the criteria we're going to agree to. That's going to be a much, much smaller, some sort of arbitrarily defined. And you're not going to necessarily have the historical data. And they're going to say, well, can you, the analyst, go pull me what we've historically gotten? And there's a degree of saying, sure, you know, we don't want to define something that it's going to be impossible for you to get. But I don't know. It winds up going back to what is it you're trying to do with this marketing thing. Let's measure that, which can then help them actually frame how they run the campaign. I don't know. I'm just off on eight tangents at once.
So what happens if it's something that's brand new to them, though?
I love this.
Because, like, for instance, like, you know, you're saying, like, okay, but, like, you know, a brand is like, we're going to try to do advertising on TikTok. Which is a lot of companies are taking the plunge. Yeah.
We've never done TikTok before. We can't set a KPI.
Yeah. How do we start going down the right path from your perspective, Tim, like on something like that?
I mean, we've never done it before. I think that is to me what's under the hood. What they believe is that they have no expectations whatsoever when it comes to the results. And I think they truly believe when they say, we've never done this before, so I have no idea what good would look like. What they're saying, I mean, and this is like, as an analyst, I will recognize that if that was absolutely true, if they have no expectations, then no matter what the result are, they'll just shrug. If they say, we have no idea what good is. Now, again, they're spending time and money on this. So I can come up with a result that I think they would say is not good. So two ways that I will come at that. And one is harder to get them to buy into. So, well, one is to say, I know you think you have nothing, but you know what? We've got four people and I'm the analyst. I'm one of them that really care about this campaign. On our next status call, we agreed that we want to measure leads from TikTok. We feel like we can measure that, but we don't know what to set as a target. So why don't we all just go back and think about it and just using, none of us can spend more than 15 minutes doing this, but just come up, pretend that we had a gun to our head and we had to come up with a target and justify it. And let's all do that. And then we'll come back and everybody said, this is incredibly uncomfortable. I have no idea. And you get four people and like all of a sudden three of them have numbers that are somewhere in the same ballpark and somebody has one that's way higher or way lower, and already you've sort of gotten everyone to realize that, oh, wait a minute, I do have some expectations. I, because of how much this is costing us, I have an expectation. Or we haven't done TikTok, but we did an Instagram Reels thing, or I read, you know, something in Ad Age. And so people do. So that's one kind of way to come at it. The other is to come at it from and I call it bracketing. You guys have both heard me.
Oh, I fucking love bracketing. Like every time I explain it to someone, they're like, that's genius. And to be honest, Tim, I don't even know where you got it from.
If somebody knows where I got it from, I may take personal credit for coming up with that.
I assume we're not talking about the naval warfare technique of firing your guns to figure out how to aim at enemy ships.
Not directly.
Okay. Huh. Maybe historically.
It's a similar, you're trying to hit your target. So,
interesting. Anyway, well, explain.
If the Navy started off by saying, I'm going to fire way off, if it wasn't expensive to shoot in random directions. So bracketing is, and this is, it's like there's the formulaic way to explain it, and then there's the reality if you can do it in conversationally.
Tim, can you just do it with one of us? Like, use one of us as your stakeholder with bracketing, because I feel like that will make it practical for someone to use it.
Are we going to do our TikTok campaign?
TikTok campaign.
We're trying to drive monthly active users?
Yeah, okay. Can't measure it. We have no idea. We've never done TikTok before.
Mm-hmm. This is where I'm not going to know whether or not you can easily see if somebody clicked through from TikTok. Let's assume that you can, somehow get a lead source.
TikTok just sent an email to all of their advertisers letting them know they're enhancing their use of cookies. So I know. It's like, wow, TikTok, read the room. I don't know. Now is the time.
So we have, to be clear, we've shifted from, identifying which metric we want to use as a KPI to actually setting a target for the metric. So we'll say that we're trying to look at new signups from TikTok and they just can't set a number. And what are we spending on this TikTok campaign? I don't know.
$80,000.
Wow.
Maybe Euro dollars, maybe US dollars, maybe Australian. Who knows?
Maybe Canadian.
So we're spending $80,000 over the course of a month, and you have no idea. It's like, okay, so you're spending $80,000, and this is a service that maybe costs maybe $60 a year. I'm just trying to get a sense of the business, right? If you're spending $80,000 and you're trying to drive new signups, would you be comfortable if, let's just say that we got 20 new users for $80,000? Would that be cool?
I think that'd be like a fucking disaster. Like, my boss would be pissed if we only got 20 signups.
Exactly. Okay, cool. So I kind of agree with you. So for $80,000, what if we actually got like 100,000 new users? Like, how would your boss, would that put a smile on your boss's face? Shit. Like, less than a buck?
Yeah, I mean, that'd be amazing.
She'd be really happy, but like, that's huge. Like, we didn't get anywhere near that last month on Instagram.
Oh, what did you get? Do you remember what the like cost per acquisition on Instagram was?
Oh,
no, I'm shifting out of bracketing.
I know. I love that you're totally going to a different metric.
Well, no, but I mean, we don't need to walk through the like, okay, so we've said more than 20 or 80, whatever the bottom one was, less than 100,000. So, okay, let's just put the 180,000. 20 is way too low. Like, what about like 1,000? And already, like, I mean, you did sort of throw out, I don't know, I don't want to walk through the, it could go on for a bit. Like, they'll figure out what you're doing is to saying, we set one that's way low, we set one that's really high. Sometimes they'll say, okay, well, like, based on what happened with Instagram, or, you know, based on something. But if not, you say, well, if 80 is crazy low, and you start realizing, oh, we're looking at sort of what the cost per new subscriber is, like, what's our gut on that? If 80 was too low, what about 100? What about 500? So the idea of bracketing is you go crazy low, crazy high, and then start moving it in, and you're comfortable with winding up with a range. I mean, that could be a 15-minute discussion, which I don't want to subject our listeners
to. And to be fair, Tim has written articles on bracketing, and it's actually a technique I explain to pretty much every analyst that I coach.
That's a great way as to
like
approach it.
This is, especially when it comes to like top of the funnel or brand or things that have never been done before, like, it is a way to get a stakeholder to set a target. And I am like, hands down, it is one of the best things I've ever learned, Tim.
And if you're listening, chances are they will start to articulate what's really going on in their mind. So you can, it's not like you always get all the way to the, like, this is the plan I'm going to go down. But the more you're listening and kind of adjusting as you go, and being comfortable that it's a range, and letting them be like pushing them to a point. And if they say that range is too big, well, then they're also admitting that they need to help narrow the range. And it is trying to get them to have like be psychologically invested in the metric. If the analyst tells them what it is, then if they miss it, then they just say, well, the analyst must have set the target wrong.
Totally.
All right, let's step aside for a brief word about our sponsor, ObservePoint. Mo, if you had to sum up what ObservePoint does as concisely as possible, how would you do that?
Well, I would say the platform brings insights, automation, and compliance to the chaos of your customer experience data. How's that for concise?
I'd say that's really good. Now, Tim, as the host who is most known for, well, not being concise, how would you describe what ObservePoint does?
I would say they bring technology governance by validating the deployment and accuracy of analytics and marketing technologies and data, that they ensure privacy compliance by ensuring adherence to digital standards and government regulations for customer data, and they aid with campaign performance by standardizing and automating campaign tracking and marketing measurement across the customer journey.
Yeah, that's definitely a little less concise.
And I would call out that they now offer essentially a free trial. You can go to ObservePoint's website, enter your domain and contact info, and they'll do a free audit that they then deliver to you as a video so you can see the basics of the platform in action on your own site.
Okay, are you done?
Am I ever?
All right, good point. So maybe I should just declare that you're done on this topic for now, but you, dear listener, are welcome to learn more about ObservePoint's many capabilities, including requesting that free audit Tim mentioned by going to ObservePoint.com/AnalyticsPowerHour. Now let's get back to the show. Okay, so, you know, some organizations seem to love KPIs, Tim. In fact, they're willing to set just tons of them. Is there a KPI for how many KPIs one should be considering?
I feel like there will be at least one listener who will pull out, which I don't know that I can take credit for, but I did use it in presentations that the K in KPI is not for 1,000. And I've been known to point that out and to people. I've also got visuals where that have also been reused of people kind of barfing KPIs. The fact is, I mean, the rule of thumb is like for anything like 2 to 5 is what you should target. But I will sometimes come at it saying, if you haven't set a target for it, if you're not able to set a target for it, then it's not a KPI. That is the self-limiting factor, because going through a bracketing exercise or going through any of these can become pretty onerous. Like, nobody wants to sit through all of them. And you say, oh, well, maybe I don't need to look at the lead conversion number and the number of leads and the lead to quality lead conversion and the number of quality leads. Like, you've kind of just defined your flow. What you really care about is the number of quality leads for the campaign. Doesn't mean you don't want to kind of sketch out what you think kind of, you know, under the hood ratios, but your KPI is really the number of quality leads. How you're going to get to there is a bunch of those are the levers you can pull.
Yeah. I know that I've talked about this before, but like, I do work in a business where we have 2 company level, I'm going to say KPIs, but I'm like, KPIs, I feel like it's such, I know, but I feel like it's such a loaded term now. And I'm like, wait, they do have targets. Okay. Check, check. But the thing is, like, we know now from so many experiments, when one goes up, the other goes down. Like, they almost, not always, but very often, because we have annualized revenue and we have monthly active users. And like, if you start pushing people towards a paid plan, you will have a drop off of users. And if you push people towards users, they're less likely to upgrade anyway. So like, and so with our, like when I'm working with teams, pretty much there'll always be like some variant of those metrics, or like a metric which is a leading indicator for those metrics or the things they care about. And I'll constantly be like, you can't have them both as a primary metric, because we know that if one goes up, the other, like, you have to choose which is the primary metric. Well, is that the right way to handle it?
That's one where, I mean, really what you'd like is to have both of them go up. So what you really want to do is figure out ways to make one of them go up that doesn't, that has a tempered effect on the other one. So, I mean, having KPIs that are, they're not in contradiction. They're just kind of more like, I want to monitor the whole, you know, oh, I want to lose weight, but I also want to stay healthy. You know, that keeps me from saying I'm just going to stop eating.
I would say that it's the same as I want to lose weight, but I want to build muscle, which to do both at the same time is actually quite tricky, because building muscle, you put on weight, right? So,
well, yeah, so that's a good one. I mean, it depends on where you are, where you're starting from, right? Like, if you feel like there's an opportunity, if there, and so that, like, if you've got it to where it's like, we have got, everything is clicking along so well that we cannot squeeze more efficiency into the one growth without, like, if it is so tightly linked. But I mean, I would think more often, I mean, the Fed used the U.S. hopefully not a political, right? Inflation and unemployment are kind of two that they, and which one do they peg it to? And I guess in that case, they've said ultimately they what, I don't know. I'm not enough of an economist to know. I know those are like two things that tend to, you can't have them both to the perfect spot, economically speaking, putting aside politics. I mean, I think having KPIs where there's some degree of balance, like if you just had, I want to drive new subscribers and you don't have any sort of cost control on it, then say, great, let's just spend $1 billion and we'll get new subscribers. Our incremental cost is going to be insane. So like having ones that are actually, it's tough to move one without negatively impacting the other one. But that gets back to setting the target, saying, well, I can't just go run and shout from the rooftops that this one's going great if I've tanked the other one. That's going to immediately draw my attention to what am I going to do about the fact that I'm tanking this one. And I'm going to rely on some business judgment to say, well, the answer isn't just swing in the other direction so that they, you know, flip back. That, I don't know.
We've talked before about, like, at Canva, we have this concept of nanny metrics, which is like, we need to make sure basically if there's a particular KPI we're targeting, nothing is like going off a cliff. For example, like customer complaints, or like maybe it's page load time hasn't suddenly slowed down to like stalling, or like there's metrics we keep an eye on to make sure they're not tanking.
You said, is there like a threshold? Like that one seems like the sort of one that's, you say this is, and we call them guardrail metrics when we're doing our optimization, to say it's not good, but we're not trying to drive it. We just want to make sure we don't do something that, and it runs the car off the road in another.
Totally.
It's kind of interesting because those aren't really, they more have thresholds to be monitored, but they're not how you're, I like that in any metrics. I like that.
Yeah. So this is actually really funny because I was chatting to Ton Wesling the other day over email about a conversation we had years ago at Super Week. And like, I remember him saying, like, if you have two metrics that are conflicting, you're constantly getting your stakeholders to have to consider and weigh up, like, what is the right balance of one dropping for the other one? Like, what is that level? And like, we've had discussions internally of like, do we need to come up with a new metric which makes that trade-off of balance for a stakeholder? Or do we just call a spade and we stick to what we've got? And like, sorry, I feel like we're really getting into the nitty-gritty of...
Well, except because it's interesting, like when running in a testing context, when you say, what's our optimization metric? Like, let's pick one. And then you say, okay, but I've got these other ones that I can't totally tank them. So I wonder if that's another way to look at it, that if you've got two that are competing, saying, this one, I'm going to set a floor or a ceiling. I'm going to set something that I don't want it to go beyond that. I want to maximize this other thing. This other one is like, it's still a KPI. I have not performed against my expectations. You know, one of these, I want to hit it or exceed it and exceed it as much as I possibly can. Whereas the other one may be, I don't want to drop below it. It doesn't mean that I want to stay wildly above it, but there's one that I'm really trying to drive. The other one is just really important. So I've set my floor for it or my ceiling for it.
Yeah, got it.
Okay, it is time for the quizzical query that confounds the complexities of our statistics and our podcast, with Mo and Tim competing head to head on behalf of listeners. Mo and Tim, are you ready for the Conductrix quiz?
Ready as I'll ever be.
Awesome. Let's talk a little bit about Conductrix. You know, they sponsor the Conductrix quiz and the Analytics Power Hour, and they build industry-leading experimentation software for A/B testing, adaptive optimization, and predictive targeting. Go to Conductrix.com and find out more information on how you can leverage their amazing tools and products. All right, here we go. Tim, we've got some exciting person for you to represent today. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Justin Beasley, that's who you're representing. Ooh. And Mo, you are representing, no pressure. He's been called the godfather of analytics.
Oh, jeez.
Jim Stern.
No, Jim. Oh, I love Jim, but the pressure.
All right, no pressure. None at all. Just know that's who you're representing. Okay, here we go. The Power Hour gang was enjoying some vacation time together in Amsterdam. I only wish. While at a cafe, they were chatting about how marketing optimization problems can be thought of as dynamic programming, or more accurately, reinforcement learning problems, where one has to learn a sequence of paths such that we optimize the overall journey, a joint optimization and attribution problem. Mo noted that underpinning the ideas behind dynamic programming and reinforcement learning are the concepts of the Bellman equation and the fixed point theorem. A well-dressed Dutchman sitting next to them listening watched Michael stir milk into his coffee. That's inaccurate. I would never stir milk into my coffee. Thank you. The man leaned over and said, "Did you know a Dutch mathematician got the insight for a famous fixed point theorem from watching how milk swirls in a cup of coffee?" Michael smiled and said, "I believe it's..." And the man was shocked. "I can't believe it." What did Michael say to this man? "I believe it's A, Brouwer's fixed point theorem. B, Hilbert's fixed point theorem. C, Banach's fixed point theorem. E, time to mind your freaking business." Or E, Jensen's fixed point theorem.
Mo, you want to take the first elimination one?
Yeah, I feel like I'd love to take the first elimination. I'm going to eliminate number 4.
Oh, D. Sorry, time to D. Mind your freaking business. It was sort of a giveaway because I probably would have not said that to a random person on the street.
Just too nice.
The milk was the dead giveaway, right? That's not really Michael, but an alien who's taken over my body. Okay, what else, Tim?
I am going, wow, which of these does not? I feel like I'm going to eliminate 3, Banach's fixed point theorem.
Banach's fixed point theorem. Okay, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I think we can do that. We can do that. All right, Mo, you've got A, Brouwer's fixed point theorem, B, Hilbert's fixed point theorem, or E, Jensen's fixed point theorem.
I'm going to try and eliminate E.
Jensen's fixed point theorem?
You're going to eliminate E. Jensen's fixed point theorem. All right, this is for all the marbles. Jim Stern, are you ready? Yeah, you can eliminate E. That's fine. That's right. So now it's literally between A and B.
Yep, I am going to go, which I referred to. I tried to go numerical last time, so now I got to switch back to letters. I am going to go with, I think that it is... Brouwer's fixed point theorem.
A, it is no idea. Brouwer's. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's consult the computer. Fun fact, this episode or this little anecdote actually did happen to Mr. Matt Gershoff and his partner, Heather Green, while they were in Amsterdam at one point in time. So this is ripped from real life. Wow. And Brouwer's fixed point theorem is exactly what Matt Gershoff said to that man. So, Tim, you're the winner. Justin Beasley, you also win. Jim Stern, you're a winner in my book, but not on the quiz. So sorry.
And can we also express our condolences to Heather that they are vacationing in Amsterdam and that was the subject of conversation?
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Okay. Well,
and that's what led her to start drinking whiskey.
That's right. And it's right. And look at her today. So
also brought to you by Milam and Green.
Milam and Green. All right. Excellent work. The Conductrix quiz brought to you by Conductrix, sponsor of the Analytics Power Hour. Check them out at conductrix.com. Let's get back to the show.
Now, not to rush you forward, but there is one thing that you and I have talked a lot about, and actually it's really interesting. Our head of growth marketing now, I love him because he thinks about this stuff in a very similar way, where he's like, we need success and failure actions and we need everyone to agree to them before we do anything. Like, talk us through, what are success and failure actions?
I don't know. Oh, why don't you tell me what success and failure actions are, and then I'll realize what we're talking about.
Oh, so I swear I have taken this from training you've done before, where it's like, this is the KPI, this is the target, and if we hit this target, this is what we're going to do. And if we fail to hit this target, this is what we're going to do. And committing to those actions before you start your campaign, you launch your product, yada. Okay, you've got a face. What's going on?
I don't know, Michael.
No, I love this question too, okay. Because it goes into basically some companies are totally willing. It's way too easy for them to do it because they know they're going to ignore what that comes out of it. And then other companies are scared to death to put anything on the line because they know it'll be their life. Mm. Like, because of the way the politics works in their organization.
So, yeah. So that's a great point. One, I do feel like as a rule, human beings over index towards the calamity of failure and missing that. And I will have conversations where people like, oh, well, I worked at a company, or I knew a guy who worked at a company where, wow, if you missed your target, you were like
gone,
you know, doomed. And I'm like, really? Like, that's, I've been working for a long time and actually having, yeah, but that's a separate rant. Maybe I kind of think of it a little bit differently. And this is just because of the way that I've dealt with. And this is based on my experience with the organizations I've worked with, is that there's so much struggle to even agree on what good or bad is. That trying to get them to recognize the difference between measuring performance and just knowing something is not hitting our expectations and then figuring out what to do about it. I don't necessarily think that it's realistic in all cases to say, if we miss this KPI, this is what we're going to do. Cause there may be 100 different reasons that you're missing the KPI, some of which may be, you know, a pandemic hits. So just getting focused on what our expectations are, that's performance measurement, objective. Where are we relative to the expectations that we had? That's everything we've been talking about. Very separate from hypothesis validation, which is, oh, we're underperforming on this. And then let's pause and say, why might that be? Do we know why it is that when we set our target, we didn't realize a competitor was going to come out with a much more superior offering. Okay. Now, cause we couldn't have planned for what we would do if we didn't know that was going to happen. So the hypothesis validation is around saying, what do we think? What do you think might have happened? And if that's what is happening, what might we do about it? And it's a whole other episode around trying to think first before just saying we missed the KPI. Analysts, go figure out why. Because half the time, if you just ask the right business person, they'll tell you why they missed it. And half of the time of that, you say, and what are we going to do about it? Well, nothing. You know, we're going to know that with the next time we plan, we know why we missed it. We're smarter. We've learned something. It's not like we have to explain everything. I'm feeling like I'm in, like, I've got like 40 minutes worth of things to say, and I'm forcing myself to summarize in generalities.
We definitely don't have time for it. So we do have to start to wrap up. Because usually if Tim wasn't the guest at this point, he'd be sending me a little message, be like, wrap up time? And then Mo would be like, but I have just one more question. All right. Well,
I didn't really answer that one all that well. But
Tim, lovely. You killed it in the vernacular of our new true crime format. No. 187. Okay. Let's do this. Let's pivot to some last calls that we would like to share. And Tim, you're sort of our guest. Would you like to go first? This is just cracking me up every time.
I'm going to go with one that it's been out for a while, but it ties into the crime piece. That's going to be my link. It's a cool visualization. It is posted by the markup, and it's called Crime Prediction Software Promised to Be Free of Biases. New data shows it perpetuates them. I don't feel like this is news. We have talked about biases and the AI biases and the analyst biases before. So I would say in that sense, it's not crazy surprising, but it was something that the markup and Gizmodo did. It's actually got a pretty cool kind of visualization where they were specifically really looking at race and predictions, kind of crime predictions, and looking at neighborhoods based on their racial makeup. And it's honestly not that surprising, but it's actually pretty clearly explained as to the challenges of racial bias when you're looking at, you know, at these, this system was Predpol, I think was what it was called, predictive policing. But you know, had the great promise of the objective AI is not going to have bias. And this was a pretty good deep study that showed, yeah, not so much. And that's my true crime last call.
Okay. Mo, what about you? What's your last call?
So I have been delving into this topic basically about like data teams as product teams instead of like data as a service, data as a product, and like how I can use this thread. And I ended up in a rabbit hole of articles about it the other day. And one of the ones that I somehow ended jumping to was called The Future of the Modern Data Stack in 2022, which is on towardsdatascience.com. And I feel awful that I'm probably not going to say this lady's name right, but it's Prukalpa, I think, wrote the article. And she actually covers like six different points. Like the first one is the data mesh, which I now actually have a bit of an understanding about, which I didn't previously. My boss was all over it. Two, the metrics layer. Three, reverse ETL. Four was active metadata and third gen data catalogs, which that one I kind of disregarded. But five was data teams as a product, and six was data's observability. And it just, I thought she did a really good job of explaining these different, I guess, data trends that are going on. But she also links to some really phenomenal articles on each of those individual six points and some people in the industry that are like really thinking deeply about those topics. So if any of those six topics like spark your interest, the link itself is like also full of other good further reading, which is really nice.
I mean,
and
you know, she is referencing great people when there are multiple past,
I know,
Analytics Power Hour guests who she
that is
yeah,
true
references. Yeah. Very and I'm nice. Sure you're going to hear more about data teams as product teams for me, because it's like the topic that's consuming me at the moment. So
it makes a ton of sense. And I, after you shared it, Mo, I read that article too, and I really agree. It's a good one. Very nice.
All right. Helps.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Yeah. So my last call, so something that happened back in January was that the Austrian Data Protection Authority kind of said that Google Analytics was verboten on account of the fact that they were moving data from the EU to the US. And that's created a big stir. But one of the better write-ups about it was from a good friend of the podcast and former guest, Corey Underwood. So his blog, he did a nice write-up on what that means and what are some of the things that might happen as a result of that and things like that. So I thought it was actually really well done. I don't totally understand all the ins and outs of it, but that's because I am not a full-time data privacy professional, but I know plenty. So that's how I stay up to date on that.
Gotta say, being a coworker of Corey Underwood is pretty handy when these sorts of things come out.
It is. It is. Luckily, he also blogs about it, and also we're friends, so I could just ask him as well.
cunderwood.dev.
That's right. Anyway, so awesome. All right. Well, Tim, hey, wow, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. I hope you ask me back at some point in the future.
Well, you know what? You know, just it's an elite group that's come on multiple times, but you keep up the good work. We may find another topic to discuss with you. Let's say in about 2 weeks or so. So anyway, yeah, that was fun, and it's good.
Funnily enough, I will not be on the episode that is in a couple of weeks.
That's so right. Or me either. All right, yeah. We'll pick this back up in a month. Yeah, that's awesome, because we'll have our International Women's Day episode coming up then. All right, so yeah, Tim, great conversation. We'd love to hear from you, the listener. So reach out to us. Let us know what you think. Come talk to us on the Measure Slack or our Twitter. You can reach us both of those places. You can DM us if you prefer privacy, or you can just at us at Analytics Hour. All right. And no show would be complete without thanking Josh, our wonderful executive producer who does so many wonderful things. Thank you, Josh. And as always, I know that I speak in this case for just my one other co-host this time, Mo. When I say, no matter whether you've bracketed the KPI or thought about your targets, or if you're having a hard time nailing down that first one, just remember, keep analyzing.
Thanks for listening. Let's keep the conversation going with your comments, suggestions, and questions on Twitter at Analytics Hour.
on the web at analyticshour.io, our LinkedIn group, and the Measure Chat Slack group. Music for the podcast by Josh Crowhurst.
So smart guys wanted to fit in, so they made up a term called analytics. Analytics don't work.
Analytics. Oh my God. What the fuck does that even mean?
No, Mo's giving the side eye.
You can do it, Mo.
Energy, energy, energy. Spirit fingers.
Pretty sure my parents just showed up.
Do you want to go say hi?
I've got the dog.
Yeah, we can take a quick
no,
because
my mother will okay. My mother will have less respect for the podcast than the dog does.
You mean than my mom, who bursts in during it and song and dance?
Well, I got to figure out a last call, but
other than that, fuck! I'm going to do that article.
Wait, which article was that?
The one that I thought I'd read before, and then Tim pointed out that it had only been published 6 days ago, so I can't have possibly read it before.
Oh.
I find that I don't do any reading or learning at all. And that's my problem.
I'm with you. I, like, don't. Although at the moment I am, but, like, normally I'm always like, what the fuck am I going to share? I'm not doing anything.
Yeah. Like, I have not bettered myself in a long time. Oh.
Rock flag and bracketing. It's not just for naval warfare.